This is We Met You When, a podcast by journalism students at Toronto Metropolitan University. I'm your host, Yannicka Saluja. We go back in time, dig up news stories from the past, and track down the people in those stories. Usually, we go back 10 years. But this season, we're going back to 2020. The World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. It was a time of lockdowns, global protests, disruption around the world, and it affected all of us in different ways.
During COVID, like, we weren't allowed to gather, we weren't allowed to come together for powwows. And I think many people's spirits and their mental health kind of felt that.
You know, I woke up, I had a catheter in me, I had a colostomy bag in my backside. It was just like intense. I couldn't move. Like, my, you know, I didn't move for 12 days. My muscles were all deteriorated. I got this scar.
I'm not all the things that they like to stereotype us as, and I was still almost killed by the police. And so, like, I'm trying to say that they use those stereotypes as an excuse to devalue us.
We want to know what happened after their names were in the news.
I've had journalists like reach out after to follow up on a different story, but not. I've never once had a journalist be like, "Hey, are you okay? I saw those comments. I want to check in." Like, no, not once, not one time.
No one was in a position of power, but many of them felt the power a news story can have. We're exploring what's changed and what hasn't.
Chloe, can I say something? Is it fair to say that you're of Korean origin?
It's a heavy thing to talk about, but I think it's also very important. This is something that people need to hear.
We're also thinking about the difference we journalists can make going forward by first going back to 2020. You're listening to We Met You When, Season 3. This is Carmine's Second Act.
Okay, well, we got our final comedian of the night. Y'all ready for this? Yeah? I think they are. Everybody, please welcome Carmine Pastorella.
What's up, Wellen? How you doing? The W dot. This place used to be a nightclub. It used to be called Times Square Rocks. And she rocked. And you know, I was just thinking when I was on my way here, if you would have told me 20 years ago when I was in that bathroom sniffing cocaine that one day I'd be up here telling jokes, I would have said you're crazy. And then I would ask you if you wanted to buy some coke. Sorry, Ma.
That's Carmine Pastorero. He's performing in his hometown, Welland, Ontario. It's about a 25-minute drive from Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. Population, just over 50,000. It kind of feels like everybody knows each other here. But only a few people in this audience know all that Carmine's been through. In 2020, he caught COVID and was fighting for his life.
It was a crazy experience. You know, I woke up, I had a catheter in me, I had a colostomy bag in my backside. It was just like intense. I couldn't move. Like, my, you know, I didn't move for 12 days. My muscles were all deteriorated. I got this scar.
Carmine was 39 years old and spent 12 days in a coma. The Toronto Star covered that story back in 2020. But when we met up with Carmine, we were just as amazed by all he'd been through before catching COVID. That story starts in university. Carmine played football. He was a center on the offensive line. And just when his football career started taking off, he got injured. Carmine tore two ligaments, his ACL and PCL, in his right knee. He needed surgery, and after his surgery, Carmine was prescribed painkillers. He says that's when it all started.
After I got the injury, you know, I started selling pot in university and stuff, and I'm not focusing on my work. And even back then in the early 2000s, like, it was really easy to get painkillers. Like, doctors were handing them out, like, like candy almost. So that's like, that was my first taste into that.
According to research published by the Public Health Agency of Canada, prescription opioid use and misuse has been increasing since 1999.
They started me with the Percocets and, you know, all that stuff. That kind of gets you going. They tell you not to abuse. Well, like, but honestly, back then they were telling people they're fine and they're not really addictive. And that kind of got me started, you know, with a lot of that stuff. And then you get mixed up in that world and buying them and selling them and then do this and that. So it just kind of snowballs.
Carmine got mixed up in the wrong crowd. His grades dropped and he had to withdraw from school. He started working as a casino security guard. That job came with lots of late nights. He was always around drugs. Before long, Carmine developed a cocaine addiction.
You're up late, you're in the bar scene, people are doing drugs and drinking and having fun. So that kind of keeps you going down that same path that I got into. And every time you like relapse, it's not just a short thing. Like it's usually like a buildup and then you fall off and like everything falls apart, you know? And so, yeah.
Carmine began losing touch with those who were close to him, especially his family.
I knew what was kind of going on and like he'd get mad at me for kind of like calling him out on it and, you know, and saying like, I know what you're doing.
Christina Fontana is Carmine's younger sister. Seeing her brother change was painful.
I hated who he was. I hated seeing the person he was becoming because I knew that wasn't him. I knew he was a good person. Like, and so seeing him like that was frustrating.
Then I kind of had another 10-year run after that, off and on, heavy and, you know, not so much, but till 2019 came for me. And then that's when everything kind of really turned around.
Carmine then started using fentanyl. Between 2018 and 2019, he overdosed. Not once, not twice, not three times or four, but five times.
And I was reckless and didn't care. And I would say, yeah, sure, you know, and like that's kind of how it happened every time. And like, yeah, it was pretty brutal. You don't take into account like the consequences and you're just like living in the moment, I guess.
The next trip to the hospital was different.
There was a nurse in the emergency room and there was the fifth time I got brought in and she had been there one other time. And she's like, man, how many times are you going to do this and expect to live? Like, really? That's another thing that I still haven't forgotten, really. So, yeah, that kind, you know, I was already there. Like, I knew I had to do something or I was going to die. So,
Carmine had been doing drugs for more than 15 years and isolated himself from his family.
Finally, it was just like, okay, he needs help. He needs encouragement. He doesn't need people against him. So just kind of like changing my attitude and just trying to really encourage him to get there and get help and knowing, hey, listen, no matter what, we're here for you. That was a big thing.
They loved Carmine so much, but they didn't know how to best support him to get help. So they turned to one of his close friends. So
Carmine's mom called me and asked for my help because she knew that I'd struggled with addiction and I'd gone to various rehab programs.
This is David, a childhood friend. So he urged him to get some help.
Carm was ready at that point. And so I reached out to Carm. I gave him all the information. And like, really, you need hand-holding to get someone in. Because like, even the drive to the rehab place is like the most vulnerable that you can be as an addict.
I'll never forget I had about a month before I got in there and I wasn't doing like crazy stuff, but I was still using. And I just remember him saying to me, just don't die before you get there, please. You know what I mean? Just take it easy this month before you get there. So like, and those words ring in my head all the time. And I tell that to other people that are going.
In rehab, Carmine discovered a new passion.
So we'd start our days there. I was in the kitchen. So I'd be up at 5:30 and I would cook for 60 guys twice a day. You know, sometimes good, sometimes not so much, but they all ate it and, I realized I could do it.
Half of Carmine's days at rehab were spent in Bible study. The rest of the time was set aside for doing work around the center.
Most guys, they move around, but I just like cooking. I like the kitchen, so I just stayed in the kitchen.
Carmine enjoyed his time at the rehab program, despite the strict rules. No swearing, no smoking, no listening to secular music. He was getting along with people there and getting into the groove of having a daily routine. But that's when the world changed.
COVID-19, the risk of its spread now upgraded to the highest level.
Thousands more are fighting for their lives in hospitals.
Heightened states of emergency across the nation as a number of coronavirus cases soars above 3,000.
Halfway through that rehabilitation program, COVID started making its rounds. It was March 2020, a time when information about the virus was scarce. Fear levels were high. Carmine decided to move home to live with his parents.
Carm came home and we were kind of like, why are you here? Like, you know, and he's like, well, they sent everyone home. The next day, it was a few days later, they're like, Carm, my mom was like, Carm's really sick.
A day or two after I get home, I get a call from the center saying, you might want to get tested with COVID, or because some of us here had COVID. So like my family started freaking out, this and that.
So Carmine went to get tested and he found out that he was positive.
Wasn't that scared. Like, you know, I was just like, it'll just be like the flu. And then a couple days came on, I started getting worse. And then I was getting like black stuff coming out of my nose and stuff. And I was just like moping around on the couch and wasn't moving around much. And my mom's like, but like, because of COVID, you know, like the overdoses and stuff, like I didn't want to get back into an ambulance, like, you know, mess with my head. So I was like, refused. Then she's like, no, I'm doing it, Carm. Be like, you have to go. So I get to the hospital and this is before masks and everything. So I get into, so they roll me in and there's like seven people were there waiting, all gowned up, masked up, everything, right? I'm like, holy shit, what's going on here?
It was at this moment that Carmine recognized his family friend, Peter, who worked at the hospital.
And I see one of the guys there, I recognize him. His parents lived right behind my grandparents. And I said to him, I said, hey, Peter, how's your father? And he's like, don't worry about my dad. We're worrying about you right now, kind of thing, right? And then honestly, 3-4 minutes later, they gave me a shot and that was it.
The doctors placed Carmine in a medically induced coma and put him on a ventilator. He had pneumonia and severe lung damage. Meanwhile, at home, Carmine's family started to develop symptoms. While his mom and sister were able to fight it at home, his dad had to be taken to the hospital for pneumonia. Now Carmine and his dad were both in hospital.
I don't even know how we survived. Like, it was awful. It was awful, like so many emotions. And honestly, like, we just kept praying that everything was going to be okay.
The only update Carmine's family got was a daily phone call from doctors. His mom would wait anxiously by the phone every day for almost 2 weeks.
And it was like, yeah, one day it was like, oh, he's not doing great. And then we're like, okay, this is it. And then the next day it's like, well, he's doing a little better. Like, he's hanging on. We flipped him over onto his stomach or we did this. Like, it's so awful because like you feel so helpless because you can't be there. So that was the hardest part of it, right? Like, just feeling so helpless during that time. And no one really knew. Doctors didn't know, like, what to do. I feel like it was just all new for everybody. So that was hard, for sure.
Almost 2 weeks went by, then finally some good news. Carmine was awake.
I was off my rocker that first day. Like, I was tearing stuff out. I was, like, I had to apologize to the nurse the next day. I'm like, I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
My mom called and she's like, Carm just called. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, he's out of the coma. So then we FaceTimed him. It was so emotional, like crying. We were all crying. Like, you know, he had this huge beard and he just looked like so rough. And he had this big scar on his face. And I was like, what happened? And he was just like, I have no idea.
The scar on Carmine's face was caused by the ventilator mask digging into his skin.
When I got out, everything was hard. I was shaking. I couldn't hold a spoon. I was walking with a walker. You know, I didn't know if I was going to recover. I didn't know if, like, I would get COVID again and this would happen again, because they weren't like really giving me a straight answer. And I mean, they didn't know, but they, you know, they didn't say that, oh, you'll never get COVID again. You already had it. So like, you know, there was always that worry too. Right. So,
like all I said, this very, after having overdosed five times on fentanyl and completing a rehab program for that.
It was frustrating because, I'd been through so much already. I remember, you know, being pretty upset, just with where I was in life. I felt like, you know, I couldn't catch a break kind of thing. But, I was just grateful to be alive at that point because, you know, I'd learned about how close I was to death. So, you know, your outlook changes after something like that.
Carmine's survival story was unique at the time. Doctors were still trying to figure out what procedures work best for COVID patients since it was so early in the pandemic. So a medical journal wrote about his experience. Local newspapers, radio stations, and television networks started to pick up Carmine's story. It was shared online a lot, and people would reach out. While most of the comments were positive, he also received some backlash.
Hey, at least you don't look like the man-child of Al Capone and Uncle Fester. Yes, I'm a Scarface. I have to walk amongst you, marked by the butcher. People often ask me how I got my scar. Funny you should ask. Anyway, one day I'm walking...
As Carmine continued to recover from COVID, he spent time in the kitchen like he did in rehab and launched a catering business. He also started thinking about comedy.
I was always a joker. You know, that first day of the semester when you get to see who's in your class. Well, I was like one of the guys that always showed up late. And, you know, people would see me. They'd be like, oh, sweet, Carm's in our class. We're going to be laughing this semester.
He saw an advertisement for a local comedy workshop appear on his Facebook feed one day. So he decided to give it a shot.
Thank God I did click on it. And I took this... this class. And I'll tell you, the first time I went up, I killed it. Like, I couldn't believe I did that well. I wasn't expecting it.
Comedy keeps Carmine busy, and it's a way for him to share his story.
Guys were coming up to me after saying, hey, I didn't think I was the only one drinking water tonight. You know, stuff, little stuff like that. Just kind of inspiration, I guess, to tell people that it is possible to recover, but also make light on a really not a great situation. You know, I like to bring happiness and joy into people's life, especially making them laugh. And, you know, like people, you know, there was a time people didn't really want to be around me. And now people are love to be around me, right?
Carmine is well aware there are still challenges after rehab. According to the Canadian Center on Substance Use and Rehab, close to half of the people who leave a rehab facility relapse. David, the childhood friend who helped Carmine get into rehab, is still struggling. He says Carmine's support means a lot.
How far along he came, and like the whole COVID, like near death experience, which I also experienced due to my liver. I almost died. Like, I was actually given 3 months to live after I left the hospital. But I'm fine now. So the tables have turned, where it's like I look up to him as a role model for sobriety.
For me, it's a recipe. I need to exercise. I need to go to mass. I need to read my Bible. I need to be around family. I need to keep busy. That's basically when what the work is like. And each day it'll get easier. The further away, the longer your sobriety date gets, it's easier and easier. But those for that first few months, years, crucial, crucial. It's hard. It's real hard.
I used to be very reckless. I didn't really care. But I realize now that, like, I should be pushing daisies. I should be dead. So, like, with what this time I have left, I'm going to make the best of it because it's all kind of bonus time. So if I can share my message to help somebody else along the way, like, I'd really like to be a positive now than the detriment.
Carmine says he owes a lot to his family, especially his mother.
Can we give a round of applause for my mother, please? This lady's been through everything with me, ever since I was in short pants. Hey, Ma, she's the queen of visitation day. Rehab, hospital, jail. But she's a soldier, though. Cops used to come around. Mrs. Pasta, where's Carm? I don't know. Mrs. Pasta, where's Carm? I haven't seen him in a month. Mrs. Pasta, where's Carm? I know speak English.
As for the future, Carmine wants to continue working on his comedy sets and finessing his craft. He's also thinking about opening a restaurant. But most importantly, he wants to make his family proud.
Yeah, so I'm just very grateful. Like, you know, I have a great family. My sister, my mother, my father. You know, my poor mom, like, I put her through everything, that lady. There should be a statue of her somewhere. It's been tough on my family, for sure, definitely over the years, you know. A lot of phone calls and, you know, not showing up, not coming home. You know, there's times they didn't see me for months at a time. So it was tough for them, you know, and they've been through a lot. And but I'm grateful that, you know, they stuck by me because I couldn't have done it without them.
Thanks, everybody.
We got an update from Carmine just before publishing this episode. Sadly, his close friend David has passed away. The We Met UN team is sending our sympathies.
We Met UN is a production by journalism students at Toronto Metropolitan University. This episode was narrated by Vanessa Tiberio. It was produced by Vanessa Tiberio and Zaina Razik. Sherry Okeke is our executive producer and professor. Eunice Kim is our senior producer and teaching assistant. Angela Glover is our director of audio production. Our season 3 theme music was composed and performed by Eric Croda. Web design by Lindsay Hanna. Special thanks to the Creative School, the School of Journalism, and the Journalism Research Center at Toronto Metropolitan University for supporting Season 3 by sending some of our producers to the Resonate 2024 Podcast Festival in Richmond, Virginia. I'm your host, Yannicka Saluja. Thanks for listening.